Hey, peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Sunday, the 24th of March, 2024. This is the review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 800 61918 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com and get with the D program. Now, I wanted to get straight into the Trudeau thing. This is in Canada where they've passed some laws that are very, very draconian, very Orwellian. Now, if he can get away with it, remember he's supporting the globalists. If he can get away with it, other countries will follow suit in the West. So this is the dailymail.co.uk, and it came out on the 15th of March, 2024. And it's titled, Trudeau's Orwellian Online Harms Bill. It says the Online Harms Act, designed to make social media platforms safer, is being slammed as Orwellian and overreach by voters. It says the Handmaid's Tale author, Margaret Atwood, said the bill was Orwellian and likes the lettres de cachet all over again. The proposed law gives judges the power to imprison adults for life if they advocate for genocide online. This is just to say it. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's new internet law, now that's what it is, people, it's an internet law, would allow judges to give life sentence to those who commit the worst speech crimes on social media. The Online Harms Act, designed to make social media platforms safer, is being slammed as Orwellian and an overreach by voters. It's got the Handmaid's Tale authors, what I just read before. Margaret Atwood said the bill was lettres de cachet all over again, referring to the royal diktat for imprisoning citizens made by the former kings of France. It says the possibilities for revenge, false accusations, plus thought crime stuff are so inviting. Atwood warned on X, formerly Twitter, Trudeau's Orwellian Online Harms Bill. So there's someone that wrote a story about overreach and Orwellian type of setup, comparing it to what Justin Trudeau is doing in real life. And it says the proposed law introduced last month by the Liberal government gives judges the power to imprison adults for life if they advocate for genocide online, even though they're killing all the Palestinians now as a genocide. But of course, you're not allowed to say that, are you? Up from the previous maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, they've gone for life. So it says, reading on, the bill also increases the maximum term in prison from 2 years to 5 years for the willful promotion of hateful online. What's willful promotion? Is that just like sharing it? It also allows a provincial judge to impose house arrest and a fine if there were reasonable grounds to believe a defendant will commit an offence. So they leave it up to someone else, a third party, police, whoever, to say, yeah, we reckon he'll commit an offence. So bingo. They can house arrest you. You can't leave your house. It's a bit like being locked down all over again. Conservative writer Stephen Moore called the law the most shocking of all the totalitarian, liberal and anti-enlightenment places of legislation that have been introduced in the Western world in decades. Justice Minister Arif Barani, who introduced the bill, said, as a father, he was terrified of the dangers that lurk on the internet for our children. He argued that laws exist regulating the safety of toys his kids play with, but not the screen that is our children's faces. So this is the thing. The internet, when it came in more than 20 years ago, changed everything. And when Facebook came along and Twitter, it changed everything because people could directly insult people in real time. So I understand how they've let this happen, okay? Because we let it happen because really nobody policed it. Now they're going to police it. The New World Order will police the internet from this point onwards, and they're going to start with Canada. It always starts in Canada or Australia or another country that's got like 30 million sort of captive people in an area. That's why they do it. So it says, however, less than half of Canadians believe the plans will make social media sites safer, according to a new survey. Half of the respondents to a Liga survey said they were wary of the government's ability to protect free speech. Now, they'll just start, it's whack-a-mole. They'll throw a whole bunch of examples into prison, house arrest. It's not going to stop it. People will keep doing it. It's because it's accessible. It's easy. It's an app on the phone. It's very easy to act on an impulse too and then regret it later. How many times has that happened to people on Facebook? So it says, yet a majority said they supported the proposals to introduce stiffer sentences for hate speech crimes. Nearly 70% of Canadians said they backed the country's plan to make online platforms safer, according to the National Post. But only 41% said they believed the proposed legislation will meet that goal. It says the law would require social media companies to create safety plans to mitigate exposure to harmful content and give platforms 24 hours to remove sexual content, 24 hours people, to remove sexual content like intimate images shared without consent, probably deep fakes, and child sex abuse images once it is flagged. So this is whack-a-mole on a big scale because they're dealing now with criminals. It's not just people abusing each other and having an argument. No, that's also a target, but now they're going to try and target the criminal world. Cybercrime is up. Hundreds of percent. It's like through the roof. And that's where all the crime is now. All people's cards are on their phones. So the target is the tech. Okay? So they're going to try and lock it down. That's what they're going to try and do. So it says, it would also allow a new digital safety regulator to levy millions of dollars worth of fines against platforms that don't comply with the rules. Good way to get rid of all the side ones like Telegram and all those side ones that people use to try and get messages to themselves because they're not allowed on YouTube, which is Google, and Facebook and Twitter. So this is what's happened. There's only three or four main platforms, TikTok, which they're trying to ban now in the US. You've got all these platforms that represent some countries' populations, but then you've got the smaller players that are going to get completely fined out of existence. That's what really is going to happen here. That's who they're going to target. Because that's where a lot of alternate media goes, because they're not allowed on YouTube to tell the truth or any all the other platforms. That's why they're targeted. So I can see why they're doing it. It's really a target for the smaller operators. The big operators, they can handle the fines and, you know, say, sorry, we'll fix it up. But the little ones, they go under. One big fine, they're finished. Now, another article talking about the same thing, 15th of March 2024, activistpost.com. O Canada. Parliament moves to impose potential life imprisonment for speech crimes. It says, we have previously discussed the unrelenting attacks by Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his allies on free speech. There have been a steady criminalisation of speech, including even jokes and religious speech in Canada. Now the Canadian Parliament is moving towards a new change that would allow the imposition of life imprisonment on those who post views deemed supportive of genocide. With a growing movement calling Israel's war in Gaza genocide, the potential scope of such a law is readily apparent. That appears to be its very draw for anti-free speech advocates in the country. So you can see straight away all the Palestinians that are calling it a genocide, life imprisonment. If they're in Canada, oh yeah. The Online Harms Act, I mean, how bad is that, people? Or Bill C-63 increases the potential penalties from 5 years to life imprisonment. It also increases the penalty for the willful promotion of hatred, dangerously ill-defined crime, from 2 years to 5 years. The proposed changes constitute a doubling down on Canada's commitment to reducing free speech for citizens, despite criticism from many in the civil liberties community. It says there is also a chilling option for house arrest if a judge believes a defendant will commit an offence. In other words, if a judge thinks that a citizen will be undeterred and try to speak freely again. Well, it is freaky, isn't it? It says Justice Minister Arif Virani employed the same hysteria to convince citizens to surrender their freedoms to government. He expressed how terrified he was with the potential of free speech, stating that he is terrified of the dangers that lurk on the internet for our children. I need to look into that guy. It is not likely to end there. It says today the rationale is genocide. However, once the new penalties are in place, a host of other groups will demand similar treatment for those with opposing views on their own causes. And that is so true. And then they'll target the smaller operators and knock them out. That's what's going to happen out of this. This law already increased the penalties for anything deemed hateful speech. The law comes after Canada blocked a Russian dissident from becoming a citizen because of her violation of Russian anti-free speech laws. So she, because of her violation of Russian anti-free speech laws. In a telling act, the government said that the same conduit, conduct, free speech, could be a crime in Canada. Indeed, it may now be punished even more harshly. So this is what's happened a week ago, people. I wanted to report on it last week, but I ran out of time on the podcast. But this is very, very serious. Because, like I said, as soon as they do it, everyone will copy. And then suddenly you'll have a global internet police that can fine you, put you in jail, or put you in jail for life. And that's going to be enough to keep people from talking. Okay? And that's what, say, we're all going to start whispering soon. And if there's any cameras near us, we'll start whispering. This is how dangerous this is, people. They are now trying to take control of the internet by telling people we'll give you life imprisonment if you mention anything about genocide. And then it'll go across the board. That's just the beginning of it. So you won't be able to say the Chinese are genociding the Uyghur population because you'll go to jail for life. So think about that, people. On a completely different note, I've watched the show Oppenheimer, which a lot of people have obviously already watched, to get an idea of history, because that's what changed the world, and it actually did. Before that, you had religious wars, national wars. You had all sorts of ideologies that were trying to be the one for the entire world, and we've still got that problem today. Except when the bomb came along, it changes allegiances, because the Americans got the bomb first, dropped it on Japan twice. Suddenly, everyone went over to the American side because they had the big stick. Then along came the Russians, and they made their own atomic weapons, and so did Israel and other countries, and they all joined the cabal. So that's what's happened. Now, they can't drop bombs on each other because you'll destroy the planet. Now, there's a spoiler alert. I'm just going to say this, so turn the podcast off. Just rewind for about 10 seconds. So what's happened in Oppenheimer is they actually thought if they dropped the bomb that it would actually continue exploding. They didn't know that it would have a timeout where it would stop. So they thought they were going to blow the entire world up. I'll just leave it there. So I got very serious. Anyway, getting back to what I'm talking about, in that movie, one of the main goals was to try and weed out the communists. So even though the Nazis were the focus at the time, it actually became a battle of ideologies after the bomb was dropped. So, and there's nothing's changed. So what the globalists have done, they've obviously realized they can't blow each other up anymore to depopulate. It's just not possible, not with these sort of weapons, because it affects them too. So the idea is to get the public thinking that one's winning over the other. Red team, blue team. That's when it sort of came in properly. So everyone's taken sides on the United Nations against Russia. So we've already seen that. Now, Israel is still, and I'm not on social media. Well, I it looks like a genocide. I'm not going to say it is. I might get fined by Canada. But because that's what I wanted to talk about too, was what's happening in Canada is going to become a blanket rule for the world on social media. So I'm going to let Luke from wearechange.org speak for the next, 5 minutes or so. And he's going to talk on his show, change.org, wearechange.org. He's going to talk about a professor called Jordan Peterson, who had to capitulate to the woke mob, they call it. Now it's become political correctness. It's not about communism or socialism or capitalism. It's about that. It's about us pointing the finger at each other. Because, divided, united we stand, divided we're conquered. That's what they want. They want to make sure we're all in our own little camp so we can be swatted. And it says, Canadian professor loses battle with psychology college over mandatory social media training. So in Oppenheimer, another spoiler alert, not really a big one, the movie is trying to, well, the actual history lesson in it is they're trying to figure out if Oppenheimer's a communist and it is given secrets to the Russians. I mean, this is a bit like what's happened with in the real world, where we've got Edward Snowden had to run off to Russia because he told the truth about what the US were doing. And suddenly the Russians look like the good guys. And you're going, what? And the same thing with Julian Assange, where he exposed what US military are doing and he's a target. So you can see that we've probably become the bad guys now, people. But really, it's all of them. It's not just the US. There's a whole cabal of everybody's at the top that have all decided this is how it's got to be. Okay, they're never going to detonate the nuclear weapons. If they ever do, if it ever happens on a war scale, it'll be a rogue nation like North Korea, and it'll be an accident. And that's definite. That's how it could blow out. Anyway, Luke talks about this professor. Then he goes into what I was talking about with Trudeau, but he says it in a different way and right to the point. Because this is an attack on us. It's not about what nationality you are or religious or anything. It doesn't even matter what gender you are. It's a we are the targets now. And these cabal elitists have got together. All their nationalities are thrown out the window. All their flags are trashed. They don't have allegiance to that. They use it. Okay? They have an allegiance to themselves and their ideology, which is to control. Okay? Just like a scientist wants to finish the experiment regardless of the outcome. And that's what Oppenheimer is sort of about too. When you watch the movie, it's about that. With the scientists just go gung-ho to get a bomb made before the Germans do. That's the theme of the whole movie. And it's not changed. People are still doing the same now, but they know the effects of what could happen if they let off a chain reaction of bombs, you see. So, yes, we're not very smart. And we've gotten more stupid as millennia goes on. So let him talk for 5 minutes. Have a listen, because he's much more switched on the Canadian thing because he's closer to it. Okay, this is not an Australian thing, but it could be. Okay, so we could get fines and imprisonment for what we say on social media. That's what this is about. Okay, this is We Are Changed. This is from 8 days ago, and it's on wearechanged.org. This is the YouTube channel, which he's allowed to talk on. If he says anything off the center, like COVID or any of that, he'll get demonetized or kicked off YouTube altogether. I think he's already demonetized. He has another channel on exactly these sort of platforms that are going to get targeted, and he speaks his mind on that one. So this is the censored one that you're listening to, but have a listen to what he has to say anyway. One sec.
As what's happening in Canada truly is an important learning lesson that we have seen throughout history many, many freaking times, as of course, first, they get rid of the self-defense tools, and then they get rid of your ability to actually speak and think freely, as it's fair to say that this is the protocol that Canada is following, as of course there have been very strict restrictions placed on individuals just wanting to, of course, be able to defend themselves against criminals who are no longer allowed to do so. Ever since the government was allowed to take away defensive tools from the local populations, leaving them defenseless, now they're going after their ability to talk and think. And that's exactly what they did to Jordan Peterson, that had to capitulate to the, quote, woke mob as he lost his battle with a college university that took away his degree and are forcing him to undergo through social media training because he expressed thoughts and opinions that the university and the state didn't like. Yes, re-education camps normalized for individuals like Jordan Peterson, who I disagree with many of his thoughts and ideas, but a lot of them just kind of boil down to cleaning up your own room, which is a controversial take that, of course, the Canadians really don't like. I guess they really like their rooms messy. But for a man to go through social media training because of thoughts and opinions that someone didn't like is absolutely freaking absurd and highlights how the state absolutely does not have their priorities straight. As, of course, just a couple months ago, the Canadian government froze bank accounts of family members who were peacefully protesting the Canadian government, locking them down, shutting down businesses and churches for, of course, non-scientific reasons that soon came out to be arbitrary and totally made up by politicians. Now, it's very interesting to see this conversation being started in Canada, as, of course, many people believe the country is far gone, as some people are standing up and saying, this is even too far to be far gone here, as a lot of people are afraid of the government saying that they're here to, quote, protect free speech by eliminating free speech. And to allow these stiffer sentences for alleged hate speech highlights an encroaching danger that individuals like Margaret Atwood, Elon Musk, and others are calling out, as of course it deserves to be called out, as there's a larger possibility for individuals to be falsely accused here. And as we've seen in Europe, a lot of this legislation is used politically for one side to punish another, preventing them from expressing thoughts and opinions that the government wants to suppress. As even the Wall Street Journal wrote a very interesting opinion piece about this, saying, quote, Online Harm Act, crime and punishment, quote, not in that order. This, as again, the legislation is vague, and it allows house arrest for prospective offensive for thought criminals that could allegedly, potentially, released some information or thoughts that the government didn't approve of. All the while, here in the United States, there are mainline corporate news anchors like Don Lemon that are literally calling for more suppression of speech because of people's opinions that were hurt by it. And again, this whole argument is absolutely ridiculous. Yes, there's a lot of mean, awful individuals online. Those individuals only have power if you give them power. Because if someone says something, the only legitimacy that you give them is through your reaction that you control as an individual. And if people understood, hey, you're personally responsible for your own kind of feelings and emotions here. If you don't want to be on the internet, you don't have to be on the internet. If you don't want to see a particular comment, you don't have to see a particular comment. You could block and curate your own kind of experience here on social media. And the more you try to suppress thoughts and ideas, the more you try to eliminate them, the more they fester and grow in individuals. And if you truly wanted to stop radicalization, you would allow individuals to talk to each other freely to be able to be de-radicalized. If you want to radicalize individuals, you, of course, tell people that they can't have certain thoughts and expressions, which, of course, is more likely to make them have those thoughts and expressions, doubling down and making them go to the furthest corners of the internet, radicalizing them even more. And again, free speech is an essential for a free society. The two cannot work together without each other. And in many instances, already here inside of the United States, the First Amendment has been trampled on and destroyed through the intelligence agency's control of big tech social media companies that, of course, censor, demonetize, downrank, and destroy independent content creators that have been proving the establishment to be lying to us through many, many instances now, as of course, we've seen throughout the last few years, independent content creators that get their news outside of the tightly controlled establishment grid were right.
Couldn't have said it better, Luke. I mean, that's what it's all about, people, understanding how the world is changing in Canada, the US, Australia, Europe, UK, even in the Middle East. All the politics are changing there and it's all becoming one-sided. We're actually on the bad side now, people. If there is a bad side, it's probably all sides now. There's not many good sides left. They're more of the innocent people that are going to get trampled all over, which is majority of the planet. And that's what they're up to. So we are all the targets now. That's the best way to put it. And they're going to try and target our free speech so we don't talk amongst ourselves. That's the other reason. Okay, now on a completely different subject, because that's what I like to do. I've got subjects to talk about, and they're not always along the same lines. This one's about the old climate engineering. And you're going, oh, geoengineering, chemtrails? That's the term that was around in the early 2000s, before the other terms. Chemtrails has been around for a long time, but they started spraying around 1998. That's when people started to notice. In the movies, on the shows, you could see all these streaks behind, which they've actually airbrushed into movies that are even older to make them look like they've always been there. This is something that can't be proven. But the only way you'll know is to look at older versions and do the internetarchive.org search, where it can actually show you what a website or a video, whatever it was, looked like originally before it was doctored or edited, as they like to call it. So I went back and I looked at climate engineering. Now, this is what is out at the moment in Wikipedia. This is the what they deem as what it is called today. Then what I did, as I always do, I went back and I looked at the archive.org to see if we could figure out what it used to be, what it said on the website, Wikipedia, that's what it was, originally. So one sec. Okay, I have the original Wikipedia that's been released now, and then I have a Wikipedia from the same website from 2004. So we're talking 20 years ago what they thought chemtrails were. This is when people started to notice them and report on them. This is when it was really a big deal. In the early days, everyone was up in arms about it. These days, people have long forgotten. They're used to the trails in the sky now, most people. So it's acceptable. And it's called geoengineering because it's for you, the greater good, people. Anyway, it says here, this is from wikipedia.org, climate_engineering. It says, climate engineering or geoengineering is an umbrella term for both carbon dioxide removal and solar radiation modification when applied at a planetary scale. However, these two processes have very different characteristics. For this reason, here we go, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change no longer uses the overreaching term. So it says carbon dioxide removal approaches are part of climate change mitigation. So they relabel it. Solar radiation modification is reflecting some sunlight, solar radiation, back to space. All forms of climate engineering cannot be standalone solutions to climate change, because they want you to stop breathing, people, but need to be coupled with other forms of climate change mitigation. Some publications place passive radioactive cooling into the climate engineering category. So lots of things happening, people. This technology increases the Earth's thermal emittance, and it says the media tends to use climate engineering also for other technologies such as glacier stabilization. Yeah, you hear the news all the time, don't you, people? Ocean liming. Heard that one, people? And iron fertilization of oceans, which Gates has had a part in. The latter would modify carbon sequestration processes that take place in oceans. Some types of climate engineering are highly controversial due to the large uncertainties around effectiveness, side effects, unforeseen consequences. However, the risks of such innovations must be seen in the context of the trajectory of climate change without them. Chemtrails, people. According to climate economist, of course, Gernot Wagner, it says the term geoengineering is largely an artifact and a result of the term's frequent use in popular discourse, and so vague and all-encompassing as to have lost much meaning. This is what they're going to give you. This is the Wikipedia. Actually, I'm going to have a look at it. It looks really long. I'm going to read. Let's go down to, because they go through all the different types of things that they do and why they're doing it and the history of it. But I'll see if I can find where it might have a tiny little excerpt about chemtrails, people. Thing they don't want to talk about. I'll just read this part because it does go into detail about all those different types of climate engineering that they're doing. There's a little excerpt called Problems. And it says, interventions at large scale run a greater risk of unintended disruptions of natural systems, resulting in a dilemma that such disruptions might be more damaging than the climate damage that they offset. That's it. I mean, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it, people? They're just doing it because it's an agenda. It's an excuse. That's why it's the climate hoax. And here's here's the explanation of what I was saying earlier about nobody really cares. It says, public perception. A large 2018 study used an online survey to investigate public perceptions of the six climate engineering methods in the United States, the United Kingdom, Australia, and New Zealand. Public awareness of climate engineering was low. Less than a fifth of respondents reported prior knowledge. Perceptions of the six climate engineering methods proposed, three from the carbon dioxide removal group and three from the solar radiation modification group, were largely negative and frequently associated with attributes, like risky, artificial, and unknown effects. Carbon dioxide removal methods were preferred over solar radiation modification. Public perceptions were remarkably stable, with only minor differences between the different countries in the survey. And they said the only people, some environmental organisations such as Friends of the Earth and Greenpeace, have been reluctant to endorse or oppose solar radiation modification. So they're very quiet on it, people. Doesn't say anything about chemtrails. I've been through the entire article and I can't find anything that mentions climate change. So let's rewind 20 years, people, to the same website called Climate Engineering from Wikipedia.org. And it says, and it's very short, people. It's very small, tiny excerpt, nowhere near the length of the one now. It says climate engineering is a term coined by the Global Commons Institute to mean the sundry assortment of proposals to, for example, to deflect solar radiation with mirrors or seed the oceans with massive amounts of iron fillings. These are also referred to collectively as the climate techno fix. According to the Global Commons Institute, such proposals all have characteristics that they are profitable, risk global scale catastrophic side effects, and divert everyone's attention from the essential need to reduce. It goes on to say, extensive analysis of these options were undertaken by Ben Matthews and David Keith. He's, that guy now is a total enemy of chemtrails, that guy. He's the one that's standing against it even 20 years ago. And it says, with the conclusion that no such fixes would be deemed feasible. Allegations that the USA is already indulging in climate engineering by seeding the upper atmosphere with large quantities of white powder, leaving so-called chemtrails, are neither verified nor denied by any competent authority. So there you can see, people, 20 years ago, they left it up in the air, literally, for people to decide what they thought was real. So you can see how Wikipedia has slowly been edited over that time. And we'll go to the, we'll see when it changed. We'll see when they dropped chemtrails from the climate engineering page. One sec. As I thought, people, this is extremely interesting. From 2005 up to 2007 on the Wayback Machine, which is internetarchive.org, the Wikipedia.org page for climate engineering changes drastically. It mentions chemtrails only as an abstract. In other words, it's not even a proper Wikipedia page. It's just a whole bunch of links with nothing explaining anything. But the chemtrails term is still there up until 2007. Then from 2008, 9, 10, 11, there were no tracking from internetarchive.org until 2012. So in the two, and this is where it's becoming global warming and people's fault. This is what is starting to happen to that page. You can see straight away what's going on with Jimmy Wales, where he's been told this is how it's going to be. And all the editors have gone in there, and that's all they're allowed to do. People think, oh, no, Wikipedia is done by hundreds of thousands of people out there changing it. Sometimes. Go and look at the richest people on the planet and see if you can find Wikipedias on some of them, and some of them have no Wikipedias. We're talking about incredibly incredibly rich individuals that should have a Wikipedia, and they don't. One day I'll put a list out of all the ones that have avoided having anything done about them. They make a phone call and they say, I don't want anything about me on there. And it works because of the amount of money they got. So I go to 2012, May the 24th. You can find that if you do a search. What you got to do is save the link from the latest one, Climate Engineering, in Wikipedia. You copy the link in the top, and you paste it into the Wayback Machine search engine, and it will show you every web page ever done, in this case, for 20 years for that, from that site, and how they edited it, how it changed. It's an incredibly good tool for knowing how they've doctored the past. So in 2012, it becomes a proper Wikipedia page. And it also has things in there like, and I'll see if I can find it, it's quite big. It's got, this is the best part of it. When I found this, I went, wow, this is a really big deal. And it's a part in the Wikipedia called weaponization. Okay, this is what I'm saying about the flooding. They're using weather weapons to flood places that normally don't flood or enhance the flooding. It's like when they cloud seeded in Tasmania years ago and a farmer drowned or died because it was already a storm. There was already rain and they cloud seeded the rain and made the dams burst. It was already worse and they killed a farmer. Whether that was on purpose or that was just, no one knows why they cloud seeded at the time when they didn't need to. But anyway, this is the accidents that can occur. As opposed to this, weaponization, it says in this 2012 version of Wikipedia.org for climate engineering, geoengineering research began as a war tactic, in the 1940s for the US and the Soviet Union during the Cold War. So it's just like Oppenheimer with the bomb. They're also weather weaponing. You had a president called Lyndon B. Johnson telling you that if you control the weather, you control the world. I'll see if I can find it. One sec. So you can hear the audio is terrible, but it's from 1962, the 27th of May, 1962. He gave that speech where he said, if you own the weather, you own the world. That was way back then, people. They've never stopped, but they're not going to tell you they're doing that because they know they won't have the consent of the people as they spray them with unknown chemicals to see how they react. They've been doing that since the 60s anyway, over in the UK, spraying certain towns to see if certain chemicals react. Go and read that book, Bitten. I keep saying it. I've said it so many times on the podcast. Find the book Bitten and you'll find a lot of answers from what the American military were doing even in the 50s with, we're talking about bioweapons, because the weather modification is a form of bioweapons if they're spraying a chemical, which is what they're doing. So that's way back then. So moving on to climate engineering. One sec. continuing to 2012, May the 24th, 2012, this is climateengineeringwikipedia.org, in the same paragraph, weaponization. It says, during the Vietnam War, the US used geoengineering to flood certain areas. So they had that technology back then, people. Then in 1976, 85 countries signed the UN Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. That's why they can't tell you they're doing it. Okay? The Environmental Modification Convention generally prohibits weaponizing geoengineering techniques. However, this does not eliminate the risk. Geoengineering techniques may serve as weapons of mass destruction, creating droughts or famines designed to destroy or disable an enemy or anyone. They could also be used simply to make battlefield conditions more favorable to one side or the other in a war, such as Operation Popeye. It says, because that was the one in Vietnam, where they tried to flood the Vietnamese out, North Vietnamese, in their tunnels, and it didn't work, but they still tried. It says, for example, laser-guided weapons are confounded by clouds, and thus switching off cloud machines would favor forces using such weapons, and switching them on would favor ground forces defending against them. So you can imagine now in the Ukraine and Russia, they're probably deploying those sort of weapons now, because it doesn't matter. The world isn't watching that. They're not looking up. They're just looking down. It says, whilst laws or treaties may prevent the manipulation of the climate as a weapon of war, it could be argued that geoengineering itself a manipulation and thus destroying or disabling the geoengineering structures is not prohibited. So they can spray and do all the stuff because they're saving the planet. A new legal framework may be necessary in the event that large-scale geoengineering becomes established, which it has. Carnegie's Ken Calderia said, it will make it harder to achieve broad consensus on developing and governing these techniques if there is suspicion that gaining military advantage is an underlying motivation for its development. Now, do you think in your wildest dreams Russia and China and them would not use this? And Iran and North Korea would not, and even the US, who would not use a weapon of mass destruction to get an edge over the other one? Exactly. And that's actually in the Wikipedia for climate engineering in 2012. Now, moving on. So I'm looking at the 2015 one, the 1st of January 2015 of climate engineering Wikipedia, which is in archive.org, which is how I find the past. And it's got the weaponization and the whole paragraph has shrunk. It's just saying that it's banned and no one can use it. But they may use it for droughts or famines. It could happen. And that's 2015. So let's see if we can get up to date, okay? That's 10 years ago nearly. I mean, the opening line from the 27th December 2019, this is like around about the pandemic, it's coming. The first two lines, climate engineering or climate intervention, they're already trying to change it, commonly referred to as geoengineering, is a deliberate and large-scale intervention in the Earth's climate systems, usually, with the aim of mitigating the adverse effects of global warming. So that's it. It's not climate change, it's global warming. Now I'm going to scroll down in real time and see if I can find the weaponization to see if they've actually taken it out and it's not there at all. It'd be very interesting to see this. I'm scrolling down now to see if they've removed it. And I've got a sneaking suspicion they probably have, simply because they don't want you to think about they have. It's gone. Okay, so from 2019, the term weaponizing climate engineering has vanished. There is no trace of chemtrails being spoken about or anything to do with countries using it illegally to control the weather. So that sort of says it all to me. So it says that they are now changing it. They've changed from global warming to climate change, which means they can blame anything and they can use weaponization of the weather to say that people breathing out are causing all these disruptions and that the solution is less people. That's it. Now, I have a widget on conspiracyoz.com and it's geoengineering. I'll see if I can go and get it and tell you what it is. And it's Dane Wigington. He's probably the most sought-after person to talk about weather modification in the world. And he hasn't got enough people looking at him than what you would expect because he's so well known, but that's the problem. The world isn't interested in facts anymore. It's a world that's all about me, me, me. Now, when it gets to that, people, you understand that the globalists have us because we're caught in a cocoon of imagery, where we're caught amongst what things look like. Once the internet is completely flooded with deep fakes and false realities, we won't know what is real and what is not real anymore. And that's where they want us to be. Confused, staring at our phones and lost in these social medias, being dictated to of what we can and can't do. It's almost like a messaging from the ether, from the globalists themselves, directly to us. So I'm on conspiracyoz.com now, and if you scroll down, it's on the right-hand side of the widget bar, and it's called Geoengineering Watch. Now, there's a lot of links I'll put up with this story, and I do know that I'm way behind in probably about 10, maybe 12 stories that should have gone up in the last month. These are the bankruptcies one, the gold, everything to do with Gaza, all this other stuff I spoke about last week and the weeks preceding need to go up. So you've got your reference points when people argue with you, because they will. They will seriously argue because they do not want to know what's out of the sandpit where they've got their head stuck, okay? Unfortunately, that's what you're going to cop. You just have to get a thick skin, people, and realize people don't really care. They actually don't, and that's because that's why we're in the mess we're in at the moment, because of that. Anyway, so some of the headlines that he's put up that you need to watch, he's got an excerpt on square clouds with a question mark. That's right, square clouds being made. Polymer rain, nanoparticles in rain, things like that, vanishing clouds, and wait for it, super glue in the atmosphere. This is a sort of effects that these climate scientist crazies are doing experiments in real time on an unsuspecting population. They love it because they're not allowed to do it, but that's because they're not allowed to tell us they're doing it. So they just keep it secret. It's very simple. So in my opinion, it's a corporate and military operation. It's sort of above national borders. It's sort of an agreement that they can all get away with it in their own populations. What gets me is there's still no whistleblowers. It's driving me mad that no pilot has stood up and said, oh, we're spraying these aerosols. I don't know what they are. You know what I mean? We need a whistleblower, someone that's virtually going to put their life on the line, seriously, to get the truth out there. And if someone does that, we're going to have a smoking gun. At the moment, all we've got is evidence when we look up what's happening to the pH level in the soil, what's happening to people's health, and above all, what's happening to the weather. Okay? So these are the smoking guns all around us, where we've got fires, we've got droughts, we've got flooding. We've got all the things they write in Revelations in the Bible, but they're not done by God. These things are done by very wicked people. And they're using these excuses to make you believe that it's nothing to see here. It's a natural event, for sure. Now, to finish this segment off, I've gone to the Wikipedia of what's called the Chemtrail Conspiracy Theory to see how long that Wikipedia page has been going and how that's been modified. Now, they have no mention of it before 2007, where we know that there's a chemtrails link in the 2004 climate engineering. So they don't want you to know. They're just going to do an update. Now, I'm going to go and look at this 2007 one and see what it says. This is from the 13th of November, 2007, archive.org. This is called Chemtrail Conspiracy Theory from Wikipedia.org. And here we go. The first excerpt in Wikipedia about the chemtrail conspiracy theory. This is what it says. And this is back in the 13th of November 2007, a long time ago. The chemtrail conspiracy theory claims that some trails left behind jet aircraft are different in appearance and quality from those of normal contrails, may be composed of harmful chemicals, and are being deliberately produced and covered up by the government. The unusual trails are referred to as chemtrails, which is another word for chemical trails. Some researchers believe that a chemical and or biological agent of some sort is being released. The term chemtrail does not refer to common forms of aerial dumping, example crop dusting, cloud seeding, or aerial firefighting. It specifically refers to systematic high-altitude dumping of unknown substances for undisclosed purposes, resulting in the appearance of these unusual contrails. Now, a contrail is a condensation trail from water vapor. The chemical theory the chemtrail theory, apparently first achieved prominence in the mid to late 1990s. Chemtrails have been discussed on radio programs hosted by Art Bell and Jeff Rentz with investigative journalist William Thomas, who first reported on chemtrails. It says, according to the frequently asked questions posted at Jeff Rentz's website, chemtrails look like contrails initially, but are much thicker, extend across the sky and are often laid down in various patterns or X's. Tic-tac on grids, cross-hatched and parallel lines. Instead of quickly dissipating, chemtrails expand and drip feathers and mare tails in 30 minutes or less. They open into wispy formations which join together, forming a thin white veil or a lake. Well, it looks like it says a fake Sirius-type cloud that persists for hours. Now, that's actually true. Dr. Leonard Horowitz, a graduate of Tufts University and formerly faculty member at Tufts and Harvard University, discusses chemtrails in his 2001 book, Death in the Air, Globalism, Terrorism and Toxic Warfare. So this is something that was actually looked upon as a possibility. Now they tell you it doesn't exist and it's global warming that we have to stop. That's what they say, and they call it geoengineering. They have now termed it for the good. So it says, chemtrails are mentioned in House Bill H.R. 2977, the Space Preservation Act of 2001, introduced by Congressman Dennis, it looks like Kucinich, where it appears as one of a list of exotic weapon systems to be banned under the bill. And it says researchers point to this as official acknowledgement of the possibility, at least, of such weapon systems. Well, there it is, smoking gun. They've had to ban something they thought didn't exist. The entire list of exotic weapons was omitted from later versions of the bill. So there you go, they don't want it. An article entitled The Chemtrail Smoking Gun by Bruce Conway suggested that chemtrails represent the implementation of technologies suggested in a 1992 National Academy of Science study, Policy Implications of Greenhouse Warming, specifically that chemtrails are part of a secret project intended to mitigate global warming. Really? See how they changed it now to doing the good thing. In Las Vegas Tribune, a free weekly broadcast, ran an article on September the 9th, 2005, entitled Chemtrails Coming Out of the Closet? Question mark. Wherein that publication's managing editor, Marcus K. Dalton, stated that the United States Air Force scientists working at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton told Columbus Alive, a publication, a weekly entertainment magazine, that they had been conducting two aerial spraying experiments. One involved aluminum oxide spraying related to global warming, and the other involved barium stearate and had to do with high-tech military communications. So this is your barium and strontium. Among the suggested rationale of the chemtrails are atmospheric and weather modification, biological warfare, mind control, or occult purposes. They have also theorized to be part of a system to counter the effects of global warming, to create a cheap wireless communications network for the military by making the air less electrically conductive to microwave and radio signals, hereby decreasing the loss of the microwave or radar signal, or to create a more sophisticated radar system with applications to both national defense and scientific study, such as those described within the HAARP project. Now, the HAARP project, just so you know what it stands for, H-A-A-R-P, is called a whole other can of worms, people, that I can go into, but not today. This is what it is on webarchive.org around the same time, 2007. So we're going to see what it said back then. So remember, you see how things change. They write them out. Okay, they write them out so that you can't find them. This is the only tool that I know of, apart from a library, where you can go back and look at this. And most libraries don't stock this anymore because most libraries are disappearing. This is called High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. I'll just quickly read a little bit of it. The High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, HAARP, is an investigation project to understand, simulate, and control the ionospheric processes that might alter the performance of communication and surveillance systems. Started in 1993, the project is proposed to last for a period of 20 years. So it's probably just ended not long ago, if that's the truth. The project is jointly funded by the United States Air Force, the Navy, and the University of Alaska. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is DARPA, and we all know what that is. Apart from its unusually high-powered capacity, it is said that the project is similar to numerous existing ionospheric heaters around the world and has a large suite of diagnostic instruments that facilitate its use to increase scientific understanding of the ionospheric dynamics. Although fears have been expressed that HAARP could be used as a nefarious global weapon, oh really, scientists involved in aeronomy, space science or plasma physics say these fears are unfounded. Well, of course, why would you be bad? Now, I'm not going to go on about the rest of it. It's in Alaska. It's another podcast altogether, but it's real. Now, that was back in 2007. I'm not going to do a history of that one because I know that one disappears. In fact, if you look up Jesse Ventura, the ex-wrestler that went conspiracy theorist, he did a whole show, a TV show called Conspiracy, before he had to run off to, I think he went to Mexico to get out of the US because he was getting chased. He did a whole show on HAARP, and it was extremely interesting. If you can dig that one out of the archives, good luck. But that's where it stays. They don't want you to research any of this. They want it to just go away. So getting back to the original 2007 article on chemtrail conspiracy theory. Now, the rest of the article goes on about skeptics to the whole thing, but there's a little excerpt here called Similar Phenomena. It's got airplanes occasionally jettison fuel during emergency situations in flight. We know about that. And it says NASA has discharged trimethylaluminum, TMA, into the air over the Atlantic Ocean as part of a 2003 project to study the ionosphere, creating linear man-made clouds which glowed in the night sky before drifting and dispersing. So there you go, people. You can see straight away that they were experimenting way back then. So why would they suddenly stop? That's my question. Well, as I should have predicted, but by 2012, the chemical conspiracy theory Wikipedia page had changed dramatically. In fact, it's only half the size, and they've even got a whole section called contrails versus chemtrails. So they've still got it in there. Contrails or condensation trails are streaks of condensed water vapor created in the air by an airplane or rocket at high altitudes. These condensation trails are the result of normal emissions of water vapor from the piston engines and jet engines at high altitudes, in which the water vapor condenses into a visible cloud. Contrails are formed when hot, humid air from the engines mix with the colder surrounding air. The rate at which contrails dissipate is entirely dependent on weather conditions and altitude in atmosphere in near saturation. Now, what's really interesting, people, is that people go, oh, it's just contrails. Then you see the jet engine flying and turn the trails off. And you go, well, that's actually not possible. But that's what they do. You can see in some videos these planes flying and then turning the trails off, which means if it was condensation, that's not possible. How do they explain that one away? But anyway, that's another thing for another day. But these are real things that are happening. They do not want you to know about chemtrails. Now, it says in the same article from 2012 on Wikipedia.org from the chemtrail conspiracy theory Wikipedia, it says the term chemtrails coming from the words chemical trails in the same fashion that the term contrail comes from the words condensation trail. Geez, that's a lot of thought going into that paragraph. Is a term coined to suggest that contrails are formed by something other than the natural process of engine exhaust hitting the cold air in the atmosphere. Proponents of the theory of the existence of chemtrails characterize these phenomena as streaks that persist for hours and that with the crisscross grid-light parallel stripe patterns eventually blend to form large clouds. Absolutely true. Proponent view the presence of visible color spectra in the streams, and I've seen that too, people. I'll put it up too, the thing about the rainbow cloud that was seen. Unusual concentrations of sky tracks in a single area or lingering tracks left by unmarked or military airplanes flying at typical altitudes or locations as markers of chemtrails. And then it goes on to, but they've still got it there. I mean, you can still look this up on Wikipedia back in 2012. So I'm going to go a little bit further on and see if they doctor it even more. So I'm going to go to 2019. I'm going to jump the gun a bit. This is pre-pandemic. So I'll go around the same time as one of the other ones, December the 20th, 2019. Archive.org, looking at the time capsule of chemtrail conspiracy theory on Wikipedia. It says, chemtrail conspiracy theory. So it's still got the same title, obviously. It says, a chemical conspiracy theory is based on the erroneous belief that long-lasting condensation trails are chemtrails. So they're trying to tell you now that it's a condensation trail, okay? Consisting of chemical or biological agents left in the sky by high-flying aircraft. So in other words, if gotten rid of all the other stuff, they're going straight for the chemtrails. They left the contrail out almost completely. It says, believer in the conspiracy theory say that while normal contrails dissipate relatively quickly, contrails that linger must contain additional substances. Those who subscribe to the theory speculate that the purpose of the chemical release may be solar radiation management, they were doing it before that, weather modification, psychological manipulation, human population control, gee, I like that one, or biological or chemical warfare, and that the trails are causing respiratory illnesses and other health problems. Remember, this is just before the pandemic when they released this version on the 20th of December 2019. The claim is being dismissed by the scientific community. There is no evidence that purported chemtrails differ from normal water-based contrails routinely left by high-flying aircraft under certain atmospheric conditions. Although proponents have tried to prove that chemical spraying occurs, their analysis has been flawed or based on misconceptions because of the persistence of the conspiracy theory and questions about government involvement. Scientists and government agencies around the world have repeatedly explained the supposed chemtrails are in fact normal contrails. That's why they fly and crisscross, because they've got to make some sort of blanket contrail effect. So you can look up and go, look at the sky. It's a big giant crisscross. I wonder if we can play tic-tac-toe in there. It's ridiculous, people. It's obvious what they're doing. You don't do contrails like that for nothing, okay? So anyway, they're just poo-pooing it now, right up to 2019. They're just saying it doesn't exist. No weaponization, nothing like that's in there. They get a whole section just on contrails, and that's it. So they're going to whitewash it. They're telling you, no, they're not chemtrails, they're contrails. That's the con, people. And the one in 2024 of the same thing pretty much mimics the one in 2019 where they're just disproving it. So it doesn't exist, nothing to see here. So you can see straight away that the chemtrails is being sidelined. As you know, part of geoengineering, which is to save the planet. So why are you upset when you look up and see all the chemtrails? You should be embracing them and sniffing it in, taking a big deep breath of that aluminum, which in, I think, last week's podcast causes diabetes. But never mind. Never mind. Now, in the scheme of things, these are just jigsaw pieces in the big puzzle. And the puzzle is, the full puzzle is depopulation. That's what the agenda is now. If you can actually get your focus on that, then all this stuff that is happening will start to make sense. You can't say genocide on social media, so I can't say it, but in Gaza, because I'll probably fine you if it's played in Canada, but in Gaza, that is what is happening. Okay, they're actually stopping aid relief from getting in. So you can see that this is a planned operation from day one. Whether it's to get the gas or just rid themselves of the Palestinians, it is a depopulation program. That's my point. Now, I did put up on conspiracyoz.com a story from March the 14th, 2024. And it was called, and it's from activistpost.com, Net Zero, the Digital Panopticon, or Panopticon. I like saying that word, Panopticon. Panopticon. So many versions. P-A-N-O-P-T-I-C-O-N. So Panopticon. I like that word anyway. It says Net Zero, the Digital Panopticon and the Future of Food. Now that's what I want to focus on next, is the food issue, because what they're slowly doing is taking away farmers' ability to farm organic farming, and also to stop the idea of meat production because of the cows, the methane, all these sort. Nothing will ever happen like that in India, because they worship the cow, so they'll never get rid of their cows in India. But, of course, we have to here because we're evil, and so are the cows. So they're going to take that out of the diet and give you a genetically modified sort of doctored diet so that they can see exactly what they give you. And you can see exactly what they give you, but the fact is it's going to be modified. In other words, bananas with vaccines in them, all that sort of stuff they talked about, that's what they're going to do. So anyway, I just thought this article sort of encompassed the whole picture, really, but to do with the food in particular, but it also names the digital surveillance part. It also goes into what happened because of the pandemic. And this is what people don't really get. They thought, oh, it didn't kill everyone, so it can't be that bad. But it laid the blueprint to do many other things to get to that point. Anyway, so it starts off with that title. And it says, the food transition, the energy transition, net zero ideology, programmable central bank digital currencies, the censorship of free speech, and the clampdowns on protest. What's it all about? Big question mark. That's a great question, people. It says, to understand these processes, we need to first locate what is essentially a social and economic reset within the context of a collapsing financial system, which it is. I mean, the next big financial collapse is going to be worldwide, and it'll be 100 times worse than the one in 2008. Okay, because they just print money. It doesn't have any value in the West. There's no gold in the banks. They know it. Most of the public's starting to get onto it, and they're getting their cash out of the bank. The problem is they want to cancel cash. You see what's going to happen. Anyway, it says writer Ted Rees notes that the general rate of profit, and there's a link, has trended downwards from an estimated 43% in the 1870s to 17% in the 2000s. By late 2019, many companies could not generate enough profit. And it says falling turnover, squeezed margins, limited cash flows, and higher leveraged balance sheets were prevalent. And that is actually happening everywhere right now too. Professor Fabio Vigi of Cardiff University has described how closing down the global economy in early 2020 under the guise of fighting a supposedly new and novel pathogen allowed the US Federal Reserve to flood collapsing financial markets, called COVID relief, happened in Australia too, with freshly printed money without causing hyperinflation. Lockdowns curtailed economic activity, therefore removing demand for the newly printed money, which is credit, in the physical economy and preventing contagion. And you're thinking, what's contagion? And contagion is a financial contagion refers to the spread of market disturbances, mostly on the downside from one country to the other. It says a process observed through co-movements in exchange rates, stock prices, sovereign spreads, and capital flows. It says financial contagion can be a potential risk for countries who are trying to integrate their financial systems with international financial markets and institutions. It helps explain an economic crisis extending across neighboring countries or even regions. It says financial contagion happens at both the international level and domestic level. At the domestic level, usually the failure of a domestic bank or financial intermediary triggers transmission when it defaults on interbank liabilities and sells assets in a fire sale, therefore undermining confidence in similar banks. So that's what it's all about, the confidence thing. An example of this phenomenon is the subsequent turmoil in the United States financial markets. It says international financial contagion, which happens in both advanced economies and developing economies, is the transmission of financial crisis across financial markets for direct or indirect economies. However, under today's financial system, with the large volume of cash flow, such as hedge fund and cross-regional operation of large banks, financial contagion usually happens simultaneously both among domestic institutions and across countries. The cause of financial contagion usually is beyond the explanation of real economy, such as a bilateral trade volume. So there's a whole thing on this. So I don't want to go into it, but you can see that didn't happen. Getting back to the article, it says, according to investigative journalist Michael Bryant, 1.5 trillion euros was needed to deal with the crisis in Europe alone. The financial collapse staring European central bankers in the face came to a head in 2019. The appearance of a novel virus provided a convenient cover story. So this is very interesting, people. This is to do with the financial markets collapsing and COVID coming in to save them so they can print free money. It says the European Central Bank agreed to a 1.31 trillion euro bailout of banks, followed by the US agreeing to a 750 billion euros recovery fund for European states and corporations. This package of long-term, ultra-cheap credit to hundreds of banks was sold to the public as a necessary program to cushion the impact of the pandemic on businesses and workers. Now, that's a really different angle to look at it, to say, oh, well, they did this financial crisis. Well, it was a financial crisis about to happen, and they averted it by starting a pandemic. Very interesting concept, Phil. It says, in response to a collapsing neoliberalism, we are now seeing the rollout of an authoritarian Great Reset, an agenda that intends to reshape the economy and change how we live. And it says, the new economy is to be dominated by a handful of tech giants, global conglomerates, and e-commerce platforms. And I believe that's what's happening. That's how they're going to control the masses anyway. And new markets will also be created through the financialization of nature. Well, that's interesting. It must be the carbon credits, which is to be colonized, commodified, and traded under the notion of protecting the environment. Exactly. In recent years, we have witnessed an overaccumulation of capital, and the creation of such markets will provide fresh investment opportunities, including dodgy carbon offset Ponzi schemes for the super rich to park their wealth and prosper. So they can keep flying around in their jets creating pollution because they're going to offset it with a bunch of trees they've planted in some city. Basically, that's it. It says the Great Reset envisaged a transformation of Western societies, resulting in permanent restrictions on fundamental liberties and mass surveillance. Absolutely. Being rolled out under the benign term of a fourth industrial revolution. That's what Klaus Schwab is calling it. And that's from the World Economic Forum. It says the public will eventually rent everything they require. And it's got, remember the WF video, you will own nothing and be happy. And it says stripping the right of ownership under the guise of a green economy and underpinned by the rhetoric of sustainable consumption and climate emergency. It's got climate alarmism and the mantra of sustainability are about promoting money-making schemes, but they also serve another purpose, social control. Neoliberalism has run its course, resulting in the impoverishment of large sections of the population. But to dampen dissent and lower expectations, the levels of personal freedoms we have been used to will not be tolerated. This means that the wider population will be subjected to the discipline of an emerging surveillance state. It says to push back against any dissent, ordinary people are being told that they must sacrifice personal liberty in order to protect public health, societal security, those terrible Russians, Islamic extremists, or the Sunak designated boogeyman George Galloway, or the climate. Unlike in the old normal of neoliberalism, an ideological shift is occurring whereby personal freedoms are increasingly depicted as being dangerous because they run counter to the collective good. And it's got the real reason for this ideological shift is to ensure that the masses get used to lower living standards. And that is absolutely true, and accept them. Consider, for instance, the Bank of England's chief economist, Hugh Peel, saying that people should accept being poorer. And then it is Rob Capito of the world's biggest asset management firm, BlackRock, who says that the very entitled generation must deal with scarcity for the first time in their lives. The guy's a multimillionaire. At the same time, to muddy the waters, the message is that lower living standards are the result of the conflict in Ukraine and supply shocks that both the war and the virus have caused. The net zero carbon emissions agenda will help legitimize lower living standards, reducing your carbon footprint while reinforcing the notion that our rights must be sacrificed for the greater good. You will own nothing, not because the rich and the neoliberal agenda made you poor, but because you will be instructed to stop being irresponsible and must act to protect the planet. That is already starting to happen. Already starting to happen with the electric car, the internal combustion engine getting victimized. That's already started on that level. And there's many other levels it started on. It says, but what of this shift towards net zero greenhouse gas emissions and the plan to slash our carbon footprints? Is it even feasible or necessary? Gordon Hughes, a former World Bank economist and current professor of economics at the University of Edinburgh, says in a new report, and there's a link, that current UK and European net zero policies will likely lead to further economic ruin. Of course it will. Apparently the only viable way to raise the cash for sufficient new capital expenditure on wind and solar infrastructure would be a two-decades-long reduction in private consumption of up to 10%. Such a shock has never occurred in the last century outside war. Even then, never more for a decade. It says, but this agenda will also cause serious environmental degradation, so says Andrew Nicky Furok in the article, and there's a link, The Rising Chorus of Renewable Energy Skeptics, which outlines how the green techno dream is vastly destructive. He lists the devastating environmental impacts of an even more mineral-intensive system based on renewables and warns. So true, especially with the lithium batteries, people, and the way you've got to run cars and things like that, the electric cars, the whole mining process, that is. And he says, the whole process of replacing a declining system with a more complex mining-based enterprise is now supposed to take place with a fragile banking system. Dysfunctional democracies, broken supply chains, critical mineral shortages, and hostile geopolitics. So true. It's not designed to make it work, people. This is an illusion, just like nuclear energy. It's designed to make you think there's a solution, and then there won't be. Okay? For the minority, yes. For the majority, no. It says, all of this assumes that global warming is real and anthropogenic. Not everyone agrees. In the article, Global Warming and the Confrontation Between the West and the Rest of the World, and there's a link, journalist Thierry Mazan argues that net zero is based on political ideology rather than the science. But to state such things has become heresy in the Western countries and shouted down with accusation of climate science denial. It says, regardless of such concerns, the march towards net zero continues. And key to this is the United Nations Agenda 2030 for the Sustainable Development Goals. Only 6 years off, people. I mean, they tried to get, they've actually renewed the e-scooter shareable ones in Perth, in a suburb called Busselton. 62% of the people said to the council, we don't want them. They went ahead and did it anyway because it's an agenda. And funny enough, the e-scooter company is a Singaporean Chinese businessman that has his e-scooters all around the world. And when I checked out his LinkedIn, it said he didn't like, he liked, this is in the LinkedIn where you like stories, and he liked the story that all e-scooters were banned from Paris, from this point onwards because of the Olympic Games, and he liked it. And I thought, well, that's not very nice saying that you don't like e-scooters in a city, and I clicked on it to see why. It's because his company wasn't one of the companies, e-scooter companies, that was banned. So I just thought, yeah, that's typical businessman. Anyway, reading on, it says, today, almost every business or corporate report, website or brochure includes a multitude of references to carbon footprints. It says sustainability, net zero, or climate neutrality, and how a company or an organization intends to achieve its sustainability targets. It's got green profiling, green bonds, and green investments go hand in hand with displaying green credentials and ambitions wherever and whenever possible. It's for the youth. As they come through this climate hoax and saving the planet, they will be the ones in charge to implement those laws and force the aging population to conform. That's what the whole point of that is. It seems, it says, reading on, anyone and everyone in business is planting their corporate flag or tree on the summit of sustainability. Take Sainsbury's, for instance. It is one of the big six food retail supermarkets in the UK and has a vision for the Future of Food that is published in 2019. Here's a quote from it. And there's a link to the Future of Food, which I should have a look at because I want to see what one of these big supermarket chains is going to do, because I almost definitely expect that Coles and Woolworths, who are controlled by global major shareholders, will do the same. So, reading on. Quote, personalized optimization is a trend that could see people chipped and connected like never before. A significant step on the wearable tech used today. The advent of personal microchips and neural laces has the potential to see all of our genetic health and situational data recorded, stored and analyzed by algorithms, which could work out exactly what we need to support us in a particular time in our life. It says retailers such as Sainsbury's could play a critical role to support this, arranging delivery of the needed food within 30 minutes, perhaps by drone. So it's got tracked, traced and chipped for your own benefit. Corporations accessing all of our personal data right down to our DNA. See, think about it now. You go to the supermarket. We used to use cash. We just did. Everybody did 20 years ago. Everyone used cash. They bought their supermarket goods and they went home. Completely untraceable. Okay? They don't even know you've been there because there's no data left behind to say who you are. Fast forward to 2024. Everybody uses a card and every item you buy is being tracked by that supermarket, and that information goes back to those major shareholders who then want to deal with how they want to deal with you. So, reading on again. It says, the report is littered with references to sustainability and the climate or environment, and it is difficult not to get the impression that it is written so as to leave the reader awestruck by the technological possibilities. It says, however, the promotion of a brave new world of technological innovation that has nothing to say about power, which determines policies, have led to massive inequalities, poverty, malnutrition, food insecurity, and hunger. And who is responsible for the degradation of the environment in the first place is nothing new. The essence of power is conveniently glossed over, not least because those behind the prevailing food regime are also shaping the techno-utopian fairy tale where everyone lives happily ever after eating bugs and synthetic food while living in a digital panopticon. There it is again. Oh, gee, I like that word. Fake green. This is the next title. This is definitely worth reading, people, because it actually nails it quite well for the podcast to just read this. And I wasn't going to go to the end, but I'm pretty much close to the end now. It's definitely worth reading it all and having a listen while I read it. It says the type of green agenda being pushed is a multi-trillion market opportunity for lining the pockets of rich investors, so true, and subsidy-sucking green infrastructure firms, oh yes, and also part of a strategy required to secure compliance required for the new normal. So you can slowly see how we're getting squeezed towards these people, towards a central bank, a central government, a central police force, and nowhere in the world you can go without being tracked. That's where they're doing this, people. And it says, it is furthermore a type of green that plans to cover much of the countryside with wind farms, solar panels, with most farmers no longer farming. So true, people. A recipe for food insecurity. And that is exactly what is starting to happen. They're starting to drive the farmers off their land by increasing the cost for their carbon footprint so they can no longer make a profit. They're already on the breadline now, and this will push them over the edge and they will give up the farm. And of course, it will be sold and they'll stick a bunch of wind farms on it. It's not surprising. And they'll do absolutely nothing, but you'll see them and think, well, something's happening. That's really what's going to happen with that, people. It says, those investing in the green agenda care first and foremost, about profit. So true. The supremely influential BlackRock invests in the current food systems that is responsible for polluted waterways, degraded soils, displacement of smallholder farms, a spiraling public health crisis, malnutrition, and much more. I wonder what they're going to do about PFAS, people, when that starts to hit people in the face with the water being poisoned by these multinational companies with major shareholders sitting on the boards because they don't really care. If they run everything, people, you can bet your bottom dollar nothing will change. No matter what you say and how many people you get together, it's not going to change what they do. They will just do it. So it says here, reading on, it also invests in healthcare an industry that thrives on the illnesses and conditions created by eating the substandard food that the current system produces. Did Larry Fink, the top man of BlackRock, suddenly develop a conscience and become an environmentalist who cares about the planet and ordinary people? Of course not. It's just like Bill Gates people. It's a technologist. Do you think he suddenly cares about saving lots of Indian children and African children and even the West from the pandemic? No, of course not. Any serious deliberations on the future of food would surely consider issues like food sovereignty, the role of agroecology, I think that's right, and the strengthening of family farms, the backbone of current global food production. That is true. That's why you've got to try and grow something, even if it's one thing. Grow it in a pot, just one vegetable or herb or anything like that. Try to do it, a fruit. Just try to grow it in a pot so you know how to do it. If you can grow one thing and everyone else can grow one thing, you can swap. This is why you don't have to be completely, utterly self-sufficient. Community farms are generally a very good idea, okay, if you can get people to admit to it and want to do it. If they see a problem, they'll do it. If they don't, they won't, okay? So it says here, the aftermentioned article by Andrew Nikiforuk concludes that if we are really serious about our impacts on the environment, we must scale back our needs and simplify society. In terms of food, the solution rests on how low input approach that strengthens rural communities and local markets and prioritizes smallholder farms and small independent enterprises and retailers. Localized democratic food systems and a concept of food sovereignty based on self-sufficiency. Agroecological principles and regenerative agriculture. And finally, it says it would involve facilitating the right to culturally appropriate food that is nutritionally dense due to diverse cropping patterns and free from toxic chemicals, while ensuring local ownership and stewardship of common resources like land, water, soil, and seeds. That's where genuine environmentalism and the future of food begins. And that is so, so true. Grow something, people. Grow something. If you don't, people, this is what could happen. Okay, this is a foreword to a report called The Future of Food by Sainsbury's. Now, Sainsbury's is a big supermarket in the UK, and I'll just get the history of it, and then we'll go into this. This is unbelievable what these people plan to do with food. Just reading the Wikipedia on Sainsbury, and already I can see that there's something dreadfully wrong. Been established for a very, very long time in the UK, and I've just gone through their whole history. I mean, they've been around, it says here, it was established in 1869 by John Sainsbury. So that's how long this supermarket chain has been in the UK. It's very well known over there. But if you fast forward to today, something that's happening in Coles at the moment in Australia has already happened in the UK. So it's just interesting to see the same sort of things happening. And guess what? I'll tell you who owns them now too. Because that's no surprise to me, but it does make me realise that we've lost control of our food operations. So it says here in the section right down the bottom of the Wikipedia virtually, it's got receipt scanning. Now, this is to do with the Coles gates that have been introduced into all the Coles stores, where the gates will close if it suspects you haven't paid for your order, or it just suspects you anyway. It seems to be like a guy got caught in a wheelchair, and that's because he didn't get through the gates in time. Another one, a woman got caught there with a pram. So that's a timing thing. But listen to this. In 2022, Sainsbury's began to introduce new security arrangements to reduce shoplifting. It says customers are held within a barriered area and must scan their printed receipt on an optical scanner to open an automatic gate before they are permitted to exit the store. The change has been criticised in the media for inconveniencing customers and presuming all customers to be potentially guilty of theft until they are able to prove their innocence. Sainsbury's has stated that the new system was necessary following a 22% increase in shoplifting as a result of the cost of living crisis. So that's why the cost of living crisis is there, and that's why they can do their surveillance and blame everybody. And we're getting the same thing in Australia now. And rather than reading the entire history of Sainsbury, it says right at the bottom, ownership. It said ownership in February 2023. So we're talking only last month, people, was as follows. Qatar Investment Authority. So we're talking about a Middle Eastern entity. Shareholding stood at 14.3% share. So these are the people in control of the Britain's food from Sainsbury. Then it's got Vesa Equity Investment, the vehicle of Czech billionaire Daniel Kretinsky. Shareholding stood at 10% of shares. So we're talking nearly a quarter of the percentage of the shares owned by this Sainsbury are foreign-owned. Then you've got cost-cutter owner Bestway. Shareholding stood at 4.47% shares. I'm going to have a look and see who the rest of them are, because that's just three they're letting you know about. And lo and behold, if you type in Sainsbury's and you've got market screener and then the word company, it'll take you to the major shareholders, which of course does have Qatar there. It does have Vesa Equity, Best Way Group, but if you scroll down, there's Vanguard, Schroeder Investment, BlackRock, the same people that sit on all the other boards of the other supermarkets. Do you understand, people? Now, remember, when you see BlackRock, you've got people like Gates and them that invest in BlackRock. You understand how it works now. And they invest in all the other, on the same, in opposing businesses. That's the best way I can put it. In an opposing business, like, say, an example, and I can't say it right away, but if you've got two opposing red team, blue team supermarkets, they're sitting on both the boards virtually, okay? So they get to steer the ship. Now, have a listen to what they want, this particular organisation now that's very respected in the UK. This is what they want to do with their food in the UK. Why do you hear this? Now, bearing in mind, this is a PDF from Sainsbury's Now. So they don't go into who owns it, but they tell you how great they are. It starts off with it's called, I'll see if I get the name, Sainsbury's Future of Food Report. And it's got, since its creation 150 years ago, Sainsbury's has been a pioneer of innovation and a trailblazer for introducing new food into the UK. Now, there's a clue, people. New food in the UK. Starting with the humble stick of butter, and now we offer thousands of products available today. Now, it goes through this great thing of what they've done over the last 150 years. But when you get to the end of the article, and believe me, it's a 34-page PDF, but I'm reading the first page and just that section. If you scroll through it after they get past all the trends that have changed the world in 150 years and how eating habits have changed, it says, the Future of Food Report paints a picture of 2025, it's just like next year, people, 2050, and 2169, showing the potential role of food for our customers and the potential role of our customers for our food in the next 150 years. They're going to predict it. It says, in 5 years' time, alongside medication, our doctors could be incorporating food advice as health prevention techniques to help alleviate our ailments. Sainsbury's has already started to help out customers with boosting nutrients through the launch of our super mushrooms containing vitamin D and B12. And there is great potential for biofortification foods to become much more common on our shelves. It says, driven by unprecedented awareness of animal welfare, this is their excuses, health concerns, and I love this word, people, eco-anxiety. More of us than ever could be putting the planet first when writing our shopping list. It's expected that a quarter of all British people will be vegetarian by 2025. Seems like I want to find out when this thing was written, because it's next year. It says up from 1 in 8 Britons today, and half of us will identify as flexitarians up from 1/5 today. What's a flexitarian, people? I need to look this one up. But I mean, what they're doing is taking you off meat. They're not giving you the choice. They're weaning you off it so you can't have it anymore. That's what's eventually going to happen worldwide. Let me just look up this flexitarian. I've never heard of it. Again, Jimmy Wales with Wikipedia. Flexitarianism. It's another ism. A flexitarian diet is also called a semi-vegetarian diet. Is one that is centered on plant foods with limited or occasional inclusion of meat. For example, a flexitarian might eat meat only some days each week. A flexitarian is a word that it means flexible and vegetarian. So there you go. That's what a flexitarian is, someone that eats mainly vegetables and occasionally has meat. Now, we've got a colleague at work that's becoming a carnivore. So I'm keeping a check on what happens to this person after 90 days when they eat just a meat diet. Carnivore. Whereas you've got the flexitarian, and I myself is a pescatarian. So we're all Aryans and isms. But the fact is, in my case, we have a history of bowel cancer in the family, which is caused by red meat. I stopped consumption of red meat decades ago, but I still eat it occasionally if I'm overseas or at someone's place, or it's just the customary thing to do. Like Christmas with the turkey, I never say no. But as for the general diet, it is a seafood diet. So that's basically what I do. But everyone can do each of their own. But what they want to do in the future is take away your choice and force you into a vegetarian diet with lab-grown meat. That's what's going to happen, people. That is already starting to happen. So I just thought I'd point that out. And this article from Sainsbury totally says it. One sec. Okay, the Sainsbury Future of Food Report, just for the record, came out on May the 16th, 2019, which is why they're talking about 2025 as if it's like 6 years ahead. And again, just prior to the pandemic. Makes you wonder, people. Makes you wonder. So getting back to the story, it says that, to move on from where it says Sainsbury's alone has already seen a 24% increase in customers searching for vegan products online and a 65% increase in sales of plant-based products year on year as customers increasingly consider a vegan, vegetarian or flexitarian lifestyle. So you can see we have been trained very, very well. It says in 30 years, jellyfish and other invasive species could be found on the fish counter as recent research has found them to be full of nutrients and vitamins. And we could even be introducing a lab-grown aisle where people can pick up cultured meats and kits to grow meat at home. Meat as we know it today could instead start to become a luxury product. There you go. I wonder if that includes fish. We could start to see a very different food landscape in 150 years, as scientists may well be farming in space. Don't you love that, people? Sending back their learnings to us on Earth. This would be instrumental to us being able to farm on land, which was previously barren, providing us with seasonal produce all year round. Seasonal produce. It'll be all lab-grown soon, and there'll be insects. It says, with developments in technology happening every day, there are endless possibilities for how we could be consuming our food in the future. Wait to hear this, people. It's likely that we'll be consuming our key nutrients through implants, while nutrition patches and drips could replace our day-to-day intake. Traditional celebrations, birthdays, family occasions could be bigger and better than ever before. What, is it still got a cake? With the aesthetics of food strengthening the bonds of community. I don't know why they added that in. It says Sainsbury's will continue to play a crucial role in expanding the nation's diets and palates over the next 150 years. Remember, globalists now push this company, okay? And it just virtually happened, okay? So understand that a brand name is not what it used to be. These globalists have been acquiring all these brand names for decades. And it's their will that will change what we do. And they don't want us. So they're not going to give us any nutritional food. It's going to go the other way. They're going to make us sick. And they have investments in hospitals. You can see the gravy train. It's just like in the pandemic where they said, take the vaccine because, you know, we created the virus. They're not going to tell us that. And now we have the solution, which doesn't work. And who profited? All of the globalists. They rolled in cash as we suffered in fear. And a lot of people died for no reason. But they don't care. It's collateral damage for the profits that they made. Some of them doubled their wealth in just those 3 years because of the fear that the whole world had in buying whatever they told us to buy, which is the PCR, go and get the PCR test, go and buy your RAT tests, go and get your jab 3 to 4 to 5 times, go to the doctors regularly, take time off work because of COVID. It's the list is endless. It's still going on. They're still suffering from what they call long COVID, which they're now trying to say in Australia. Certain chief health officers are saying, don't call it that. So there you go. Okay, so let's move into 2025, and it's what they've added in this PDF is a scenario. That's right, a scenario on what it would be like in just 2025. So this is next year. So we're almost looking into the crystal ball as it's about to happen. So I'm just fast forwarding. So it goes to the future of food scenario 2025. It's only next year, people. It's the May Day bank holiday weekend and the sun is shining in Leeds in the UK. Julia has just returned home from her parents from university in London, where she is studying her degree in eco health. Tomorrow is her mother's 60th birthday and she is planning to cook a meal for all the family. She opens up her meal planner app and asks it to update the quantities for seven, taking into account her sister's gluten intolerance. I wonder how that developed. Her brother's love of Italian and her grandparents' mind diet, designed to prevent dementia and loss of brain function as you age. She smiles gleefully at the thought of showing her dad that the entirely vegan meal has surpassed daily recommended nutritional guidelines. Secretly, he would prefer to eat steak, but she's determined that the whole family follow a more flexitarian diet. This is the one ruling the food chain at the home. The app alerts her that the order has been placed at the local supermarket, Sainsbury's in bracket, and will be ready for collection at 1 p.m. At the supermarket, Julia makes her way to the pickup point through the vegetable area. Microgreens are lapping up the LED light and water softly dripping across the hydroponic shelving. It says a hydroponic shelving stack growing leafy vegetables all year round. This isn't a supermarket, really. On the way back, she briefly stops by the supermarket's kitchen demo area to see a workshop led by her local healthcare centre. The former local doctor has become something of a celebrated community chef. Doctor is a chef, people. Is stirring a sizzling wok of moringa leaves while discussing its suitability to help manage diabetes. Well, if they stopped spraying the air, we wouldn't be getting aluminum and we wouldn't be getting diabetes, would we? As well as benefits for those lacking in essential nutrients. Julia knows that from her studies, there is a huge amount of research going into growing moringa as a global crop. And you're thinking, what's moringa? I'll look it up. Which can be ground and made into a low, looks like glycemic, high nutrient alternative to flour. So they're going to use moringa instead of flour. I'll have to look that up. Back in the kitchen, she sets out the ingredients on the menu. They are root vegetable soup with seaweed and hemp seeds, bread made with a dash of lychee, a recent addition to the supermarket shelves, as well as Nana's favourite locally brewed herbal kombucha, which she loves because nothing else keeps her quiet as regular. So you see where this is going, don't you, people? It's going to a Japanese diet almost, which is a good thing, but in the West, they have a tradition of eating meat and they want to take it out of the diet. So it seems like I don't see fish in that diet. It's all vegetable. But if they include fish, we're probably on the right track. But I don't believe they want us to be anywhere near the right track. Now, there are lots of sections to this this report. The next one's called Plant Friendly Food. And it goes on for a bit. I'm not going to read into it. I'll just tell you things here. It says, in 2025, the flexitarians were under half of all UK consumers. So, and I don't think it's because they're choosing to eat less meat. I think it's because it's not affordable. So that's in that section. But they've got another part of that section which goes on, and this is incredible, about the plan of the apps. It says a consolidation of environmental footprinting apps will also help make our food planet friendly by 2025. By providing much more clarity to customers about the biggest impacts of our food. Integration of these apps into ones more widely used, such as Google Maps, can you believe this, people, will provide accurate, tailored information to customers whether they're interested in carbon, calories, or chemicals, cutting through the complexity and delivering personalized information. With all the information in one place, don't you like that? Making the right choices for the health of the planet will be far easier for both retailers and their consumers. Very interesting stuff, people. Where they're making your phone guide you to what you even eat. So there's another section here called Beyond Meat and Fish. So it looks like I'm going to lose out in the end too. and it's from Claire Hughes, who's the head of quality and innovation at Sainsbury's. I won't look these people up because I already know they're in the pay packets. There's no point. But it's got plant-based alternatives that aim to mimic the flavour and texture of animal products are becoming increasingly popular and diverse. It says traditional protein for human consumption comes from meat and fish. That's true. However, as food production faces multiple limiting factors, well, that's because they're doing it, for land, water and energy, that's for the New World Order, and as environmental impacts mount, that's the global hoax, the climate hoax, scientists are calling for a change in our diets. Scientists are on the pay packet for the New World Order people and the way we consume our protein. The non-traditional or alternative proteins market, which is was worth $4 billion in 2016, is expected to grow more than 25% by 2025. It says through 2016 to 2019, just before the pandemic, dozens of companies were launched, with many attracting high-profile investment from the New World Order, obviously. One of these to take the industry by storm was jackfruit. First brought to the UK retail market by Sainsbury's in January 2018, in a smoky barbecue pulled form, the plant-based alternative now features in over 9 products on its shelves, from lunchtime wraps to a vegan quarter pounder. The next innovation focus for Sainsbury's is on incorporating banana blossom, a plant-based fish-like alternative to range of prepared meals. So, just for the record, people, years ago, I used to get the missus to buy me plant-based sausages because I wasn't going to eat real sausages, but they used to smell and taste like sausages. The problem was that I was going to the toilet more often and getting the runs more often, and we could never work out what was causing it. Then I stopped eating the sausages, and that stopped too. So I put two and two together and thought to myself, how could that have caused it? Still to this day, I have not been able to figure it out. If you can, email me at conspiracyoz@proton.com and I will try to answer it. Because I don't understand why we have to change from natural organic food to lab-grown food where they can add whatever they like to the food. Vaccines, this and that. It becomes frankenfoods. It really does start to emanate something that is not real. And then one day we'll be eating Soylent Green, won't we? And we won't even know because we'll think it's great because they'll tell us. And reading on from Beyond Meat and Fish from Sainsbury's, which is practically one of the biggest stores for food in the UK. So Coles and Woolies will eventually copy these products. But anyway, let me read on. It says, mushroom-based products, algae milk, seaweed caviar and insects are just some of the increasingly sophisticated, don't you love the word, sophisticated options whetting investor appetite. Sainsbury's alone has seen a 24% increase in customers searching for vegan products online and 65% in sales of plant-based products year on year as customers increasingly consider a vegan, vegetarian or flexitarian lifestyle. Looks like Krekkerif, a Dutch, or Krekkerish, I can't say Dutch, but it says a Dutch startup based in Rotterdam produces a number of cricket and grasshopper-based products, processing the insects as raw ingredients with flour and other vegetable bases to make its signature cricket burger and a nutty-flavoured cricket-based pasta to demonstrate its versatility. Sainsbury's was also the first UK supermarket to introduce snack packs of insects through the brand Eat Grub. Wait till it's Eat Cockroach. Is that going to go down, people? But growing interest in plant-based proteins is flagging up another consideration. Though there are more than 50,000 edible plants in the world, still nearly two-thirds of our food comes from just 4 crops: wheat, maize, rice, and soybean. And that's what they want to attack, people. They want to make sure that get that out of your diet so they can control you with genetically modified insect proteins. That's what they want to do. And it's just like when GM started, when genetically modified organisms started, and when I became aware of them more than a quarter of a century ago, what it was is they were attacking organic grown vegetables and fruit. These are the things that are grown naturally from the earth, from time immemorial. These are the ones when you plant the seeds, it regrows. If the soil's good enough, it will regrow again the year later. What the genetically modified mob wanted to do was to create seeds that they patented, which means they did not regrow every year. You would have to go back yearly and buy the seeds again. This was the plan, so they could own food, and they have not stopped. And this is just another version of it from the meat angle. Because what happens with genetically modified crops, and this has been proven in Australia, there were two farmers. Steve Marsh was one in Western Australia, and I forget the other fellow's name that was running the Monsanto-based genetically modified seeds. I can't remember if it was canola, I can't remember what the crop was, but it's irrelevant. What happened is that the GM crop blew into Steve Marsh's organic farm and contaminated it. What do you think happened when Steve Marsh got angry because of the GM blowing into his farm? He went to court and he lost the case to Monsanto, which has now been bought out by Bayer, a chemical company. Funny that. So you can see that you can't win against big pharma, big agri, big anything to do with the globalists that have got shares in these companies will crush you with their lawyers of endless bags of gold. In other words, it's got nothing to do with right and wrong. It's got to do with who's got the biggest bag of cash. That's what is right in the eyes of the world now. Right across the board, not just food, everything. You got a big bag of gold to give someone, they'll take it. They don't care about ethics or morality anymore. That's left behind. And as these terrible things happen, the new moniker for the future is don't get caught. So they'll just give it a brush over so it looks like Happy Days meets the Brady Bunch and everyone thinks everything's fine, but underneath it, the worst evil's being perpetrated on humanity. And it's just another one where they gloss it over with saving the planet while you eat crickets and cockroaches and mosquitoes and insects while they dine on steaks. Believe you me, people, they're going to keep eating the diet that's always been around. They're not changing. They'll pretend to do it. You've got people like King Charles with planes flying around him with his own virtually mini farms on them because he knows he's not going to eat that stuff that's down there. You know what I mean? Same with the water. They're not going to drink the municipal water that you drink. They're going to drink the purified water that doesn't have any of those nasties in it like fluoride. This is what the world has become. They understand the science and technology. They've trained themselves. They have not done that with the public. They just tell you to believe. And Sainsbury's, no difference, people. Coles and Woolies in Australia, no different. It's going to go the same way. Okay? So rather than read the rest of the article, you understand now they are pushing genetically modified like you wouldn't believe. And don't forget, people like Bill Gates is at the helm of this, with shares in Impossible Foods and all the others, because he knows that they're going to get you off that diet and they're going to make sure you get grossly sick, because that's what's going to happen. And then you'll be dependent on their drugs and their medicines just to survive. And that's a slow kill. It's not what they really want. They want a fast kill. But in the meantime, if they can start weaning you off the stuff that's keeping you alive, the better. And it says here in the same report, Beyond Fish and Meat, it's got insect and algae protein sources represent a potential viable, sustainable, don't you love the word sustainable, and radically less resource intensive alternative to conventional livestock feed. So, and I'm not going to read any more, but you can see what they're doing, people. They are moving fast. Now they've got food as medicine, people. It's got unhealthy diets are responsible for 11 million preventable deaths globally. Do you think they really care? More even than smoking tobacco. As a result, globally, around 70% of consumers are actively making dietary choices to help prevent conditions such as obesity, well then stop breathing in the aluminum that they're spraying, diabetes, same thing, and high cholesterol. Limiting salt, sugar, and trans fats is important, really. According to new research, who paid for that? But even more so is ensuring we get enough of the vitamins, minerals, and micronutrients that contribute to well-being and help fight chronic diseases. There are more sick people now and dying at younger ages than ever in history. There really is, people, because even when I was growing up, there were no people dying around me that were young. We had one autistic person in the street, that was it. There was no ADHD. There was none of this stuff, and everyone went through life normally. But these days, they don't tell you that normal is normal. No. You've got to take the drugs to get to the normal. And this is what this is going to say. So it says, recent scientific research, bags of gold under the table, suggests that some foodstuffs have the potential to boost brain power, I like the word potential, promote gut health, to regulate mood and balance hormones. I'll probably give you food that's got ingested with medicines to calm you down, people. Maybe they'll start injecting lithium into the food we eat. It says, as individuals increasingly strive to improve their performance in their personal and professional lives, interest has grown in extracts, powders, and food derivatives with health-enhancing qualities. The idea of food as medicine has been around for some time. Medicine and diet, from the medieval period onwards, really, were seen as inseparable to ensure good health. So we're medieval again. This link was well known to our ancestors, but was forgotten when medicine was professionalized outside the domestic setting. So we're going back to the occult, are we, people? Are we going to get the pestle out or whatever that thing's called, the grinder, and grind the powder up? This just gets so nonsensical. I'll read on. Well, into the 19th century, manuscript cookery books and many household manuals published by women included not only cooking receipts, but medicinal remedies known as recipes. Hang on, weren't they called witches back then? And didn't they burn them for coming out with all these herbal recipes? Well, anyway, moving on. The shift now is blurring the boundaries between medical institutions and food businesses in the public imagination. That's because they're telling you that. The thinking in preventative medicine through food and nutrition is now beginning to incorporate diet into healthcare. Rather than relying solely on medications, that's what they've been doing, and food businesses are beginning to support customers in making healthy choices, in addition to offering products such as bio-fortified foods with potential health benefits. I like how they keep saying potential. It's got Sainsbury's bio-fortified foods such as chestnut super mushrooms and salmon are developed especially to support consumers in getting the balance of the extra nutrients they need. Now, this reminds me of back in the 80s. I grew up with some German people that I hung around with, and I remember the father was a butcher, and he came home one day and he said, because they're very big meat eaters, back in the 80s, extremely big, probably still big meat eaters in Germany now, I'm not sure, when we were there, didn't look like they were, but I'm pretty sure that the old school Germans, definitely. But anyway, the story I'm telling is that he came home one day, and this is roughly around when I was going vegetarian. So that's a long time ago, people, but you also get the gist of how I was changing because of the red meat, the bowel cancer in the family, that sort of thing. And this guy was sort of being a bit nice to me. He'd have things like chicken heart soup and be eating that in front of me. And I'd be thinking, don't think I'm going to try the chicken heart soup anytime soon. But he came home one night with slices of ham, and in between the ham were mushrooms imprinted into the ham. They were grown and put inside the ham. And he would slice it up and go, look, it's still vegetarian and meat. It's a terrible impression, by the way, people. But it didn't work. I still didn't go for it. But there you go. This is the convincing that the prostitute media and the globalists want to do now, as you'll probably see a cockroach embedded in the fake ham. And they'll say, it's fine, just eat it. And then pay exorbitant amounts of money for it. People are hoodwinked. It's really, really sad. And now the mushroom salmon from Sainsbury. It says the salmon fed a bespoke diet is specifically formulated to deliver the weekly required intake of particularly long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. See, we're all like astronauts now. They're managing our diets while we float around in space, except we're on Earth and there's gravity. And why are we doing this? It says EPA and DHA in one portion, while 100 grams of the mushrooms delivers 100% of consumers' vitamin D and B12 needs. At Sainsbury's, there's a great potential to take this one step further and include these super ingredients in ready meals, making it even easier for customers to get extra nutrients in their diets. Faced with an epidemic of type 2 diabetes, medical institutions across California, where else, have introduced Shop with your doc. Food programs, where healthcare providers offer in situ nutritional advice from a professional healthcare practitioner. The funny thing is, every time I see doctors, not all the time, they don't look very healthy. So I'm not sure if I'd take advice from someone until they start looking healthier than me. It says another pilot called Geisinger Health Systems, Fresh Food Pharmacy, targeted illness stemming from food insecurity by providing fresh produce and educating patients on lifestyle approaches to better manage their disease. And it just goes on to tell you about how you should be doing what they tell you to do. That's the rest of the article. So I won't read the rest, but you can see just like what happened with Jeff Kennett, ex-Premier of Victoria and Australia. Years ago, he bought fresh bread from one of the supermarkets. I won't name them because I actually can't remember which one it was. It was Coles or Woolies, one or the other. And it said that the bread was marked fresh baked today. He read the label and it was baked in someone like Spain or Ireland, but not in Australia, so it couldn't be fresh. He took them to court and won. Then they employed him. I can't remember if it's Colt or Woolies, but that's a true story. You can look all that up, people. I'm not going to go into the history of Jeff Kennett, but that's how the world works. Bags of gold. And just to continue what's happening in 2025 via Sainsbury's, and I'm reading this because this is going to be a blueprint for what's happening in Australia and the rest of the world. They're going to promote this. They're going to use it because it's the green machine trampling over what you like individually. It says, by 2025, we will be eating our way, next year, to a healthy planet and population. Probably be eating the population. They should take that out. Stemming from the unstoppable rise of public awareness and the prestigious media of how our food impacts not only our individual health, because they're telling you, but the health of the environment. Well, of course, it's the same, isn't it, people? Our palates, hungry for ecological public health, will become more and more adventurous in using food, wait for it, people, as a tool for environmental action. you just can't believe it. Then they go into scenario 2050, which I don't really want to read, but it's probably something that I should, because it will give you an insight in what they're going to try and make you do sooner. They're not going to wait till 2050 to do this, but let's just read the scenario. It's Julia again, people. It's Tuesday, the 12th of July, 2050. Julia, who now lives in Cornwall, greets a regular customer. It's Mr. Walker, the local councillor. I like how they put Walker, because you won't be in a car anymore. Comes to the facility every week to select cuts for his family dinner and watch the meat being printed out. Her business, which offers a range of environmentally friendly proteins, really took off after the decline of abattoirs in the UK in the 2040s. Alongside cultured meat, she offers jellyfish, seaweed and algae, sometimes fresh, but mostly dried and prepared on site and sold as pastas, flakes and powders. At one end of the property is a farm, cultivating plants that will provide the growth serum in which cells are developed. At the other, giant meat-growing vats lead to a small conveyor belt where the meat is assembled with a 3D printing technology. The artisan factory has a number of own robots, and only humans involved in the process walk between the belts performing quality control. Her customers really value the complete transparency of the whole process. The whole process is visible to them, both digitally and physically. Even the walls are made from a durable, flexible glass. Oh, really? That's not plastic, is it, people? After saying goodbye to Mr. Walker, Julia receives an alert on her personal robot assistant that links to her real-time data about some marine stocks that are due to come in later that week. She'll be able to prepare some customer offers promoting the ocean area the stock comes from and the fishermen who harvest it. Fishermen? I don't think they'd be allowed in the future, people. Maybe they'll be culturing them in their own little lab-grown pools out the back. That's probably more like it. And I'll just leave this thought with you, people, where they talk about cultured meat, okay? And I'm not even halfway through the article, but I'm not reading the rest of it. It's just farcical. But they say, with the world's population expected to reach 9 billion by 2050, but it won't, because I'll make sure of that, it will not be sustainable to produce and consume the same quantities of meat that we currently eat in 2019. The average European eats 80 kilograms of meat per year, while North Americans and wait for it people and Australians eat over 110 kilograms per year. If populations who have historically eaten less meat follow our eating habits, we won't have the natural resources or environmental stability to produce for global demand. Well, that's not going to happen because the same people starving in Africa and in India and even in China still won't be able to afford the meat anyway. So that's farcical. Basically, what they're saying is we want you to be the same as them and have nothing and be happy. That's what they want to do, people, and control the food. I remember when the Indian farmers revolted when they were forced to buy the GM rice. They made the GM rice and realized, hang on, we've got to buy this again. And there was a huge uproar because they didn't realize that the genetically modified rice would not regrow. And when they finally got duped into it, they realized they couldn't do it. There was a massive protest. But GM contaminates the organic, you see. So it's now become a dangerous thing in India even. In other words, they want to get the traditional farmer to accept something that another globalist company owns. That's what's happening, people. So if we fall for it, we will fall for it in a really bad way. They're using the excuse of global warming, the climate hoax, to force people into a different diet, and then they're going to force you into the diet that they want. And the word die and it is you, because they don't want any more people. They do not want 9 billion people by 2050, I can tell you right now, okay? They are going to move very quickly to cull people, okay? Now, this is the way to weaken them, all right? Ready for that. So, and I'm just saying, I've got, like I said, we've got a colleague at work that's doing the carnivore diet, and I'm very curious on what's going to happen with that. Okay, so there's a lot of people now asking questions about food because it's getting harder and harder to find natural food. Okay, it's still out there. There's still people doing it, but it's getting harder and harder. And they want it stopped through this climate hoax, through the environment thing. And they're already saying it here by saying, oh, Australians shouldn't be eating 110 kilograms of meat a year. That's absurd. Why don't you eat a bag of cockroaches instead? On the barbie. Imagine that. Barbecued cockroach. Oh, yum. Shaped as a steak, of course. They just crush them all together and make it look like a leg of a beef leg. I don't know what you call that. Sirloin. Yeah, that's it. Sirloin beef and all that wagyu, all that stuff. Yeah, they make it look like the cockroach version. I wouldn't touch it. See, this is the thing, people. They want us to change the way we think about food. And just to finish up, they've given me the answer to my fish diet. It's got several avenues are being explored to relieve the future pressures of a fast-growing population on habitats, land and soil. Protecting marine ecosystems is a major global challenge. That's why they're creating marine parks everywhere you can't fish people. One solution may lie in the world's oceans, where many new sources of food have yet to be discovered. With fish a primary source of animal protein for at least 1 billion people in the world, probably more than that, the stakes are high when we consider how many linked to the health of our oceans is to our environmental, social and economic well-being. The threat of, here we go, sustainability to our oceans will be a major consideration by 2050. Now, it's already a consideration now. As such, Sainsbury's is proud to have been recognised in 2017 by the Marine Stewardship Council as the best sustainable seafood supermarket in the world. This is based on sheer volume on the MSC certified products available on shelf, and it's pledged that all wild caught or farmed fish to be independently certified as sustainable by 2020. Well, I hope they've done that, people. And it says, similar to our reliance on a small number of profitable yet concentrated crops, the British seafood diet currently relies on staples of cod, haddock, salmon, tuna and prawns. However, with a global population of 9 billion by 2050, here we go again, turning to the ocean for more authentic protein compared to cultured meat, diversity will be the key to maintaining the health and vitality of marine environments. Sainsbury's is also leading the way with the much-needed recognition of lesser-known species. So they want you to eat the lesser-known species of fish. In other words, get you off your salmon and tuna, people. And a lot of the salmon and tuna fisheries have been bought out by globalists already. Okay, I remember my favourite fish company was Tassal in Tasmania, and they have fallen under the hammer of the globalists who have bought it out, a Canadian firm. So we don't have any localized salmon produced in Australia anymore. It's gone. So that means food can be going offshore and controlled by globalist agendas. That's what's so dangerous, people. And then they marine park everything where you can't fish. There was actually once I saw a story years ago, and I reported on the podcast, that there was an Aboriginal fellow, an elder, who had fished in the same spot for his entire life and generations before. And he went into the ocean to do his fishing, and he was stopped by a particular fellow that was like part of an environmental group that said, you can't do that here. And the fellow said, why not? We've always done it. He said, because you're not allowed to do that here anymore. And this is what it can happen. This is what can happen when they expand the boundaries of these marine parks to include actual traditional fishery areas that will no longer be allowed to fish in. That's what's starting to happen, people. So I'm not surprised, but that's what they want to do. And it says here, between the current growing awareness of food waste and adventurous appetites of the consumer lies an ocean of opportunity. Don't you love that, people? For food businesses by 2050. In New England, US, chefs have responded to the invasive green crab, which has wreaked havoc on the local ecosystem, turning it into a tempura-style menu item. Taking things further, local healthy ocean advocate and chief Bun Lies restaurant, Sushi Maya, is based on a 42-page manifesto-style menu, setting out just how future food demand can be channeled into a force to support environmental balance. It's got Simmery near London. Crayfish Bob is an enterprise creating new outlets, dining events and retail products using the non-native crayfish that has invaded the Thames. So you're reading the invasive crayfish in the Thames now. I'm not going to read any more, but you can see now they're pushing you to the bottom of the barrel with the food. Okay, and then make it so you can't fish and you can't eat food on the land. That's when they have you. And then down the track, little by little, we'll be eating Soylent Green. And we'll be happy, apparently. And I'm going to have to finish up with this scenario 2169 from Sainsbury's. This is not going to be that far in the future, people. It's going to be more recent. But they've got Jill, Julia's granddaughter, so they're obviously tagged it on like a family, feels a vibration in her wrist. She taps her skin twice to switch off the alarm. That's embedded in her arm, which notifies her nutrition drip to prepare her breakfast shot. Don't you love the fact that they call it a shot, people, just like in the pandemic, which was dispatched last night from Sainsbury's in preparation. Sainsbury's. Today is the 50-year anniversary of Drawdown, the first mission of robotic farmers, because they're all gone now too, people, to resuscitate the desert, triggering a chain of global rebalancing that reversed climate change. Jill blinks right to the latest news and closes her eyes to watch the report. Of course she does. The famous scene with the autonomous arm laying the first layer of soil on baking sand. The temperature of the air too hot for humans. So I thought they were reversing climate change. Sounds like it's already happened. It says, fill her with wonder of one of the major feats of humankind, but it was a robot that did it. In the last 50 years, communities around the world have worked tirelessly to reintroduce the plants and vegetables that were once indigenous to their regions. This sounds dystopian to me, people. This doesn't sound like it's a good thing in 150 years. I thought they were trying to fix it. It doesn't sound like it was fixed at all. It says, the stewards of the land have done much to understand the language of nature so as to develop a circular life. That's the circular economy, people, within planetary boundaries. Waste wasn't just eliminated. It is a word no longer in use. That's because everything that gets like waste gets re-eaten and re-drank. So when people die, I'll say no more. And it says, Jill is interrupted by Hal Lowe, who administers her intravenous breakfast. Isn't that lovely, people? Before she gets ready for the day. I notice how it's called Hal Lowe. Remember Hal in 2001 A Space Odyssey? Where he says, I can't do that, Dave. It's now a robot giving you your life support. It says, a local community outside of Leeds, of course it's back there again, where Jill's ancestors lived as far back as 2019, are planning a social eating experience to celebrate. The committee has been planning the major and micro tastes and textures for some weeks, sourcing the ingredients from both its own supply of vegetables and grains, as well as local bioreactors and culture farms. Don't you love all this futuristic talk, people? Despite these technological shifts, the celebration of food continues to be a celebration of life. It's not really food if it's intravenously jabbed into you, is it, people? I don't understand all this stuff. But anyway, that's Sainsbury's history, the way they want you to do it. Believe it, people, it's a danger and they're letting you know. So that report was put out by Sainsbury's and it says, with the help of Department 22, which is an innovation agency. I can't find them, people. I've looked them up. There's nothing there. It says Department 22 is an innovation consultancy specializing in design technology, sustainability and food, transforming global challenges into exciting new business opportunities through design thinking. But I can't find anything on them. If you can find something, could you please send it through to conspiracyoz@proton.com, because I'm very curious. This is very interesting how they've offloaded most of the ideas onto this Department 22, and I can't find anything when I do a search on them. So that's already an anomaly. But it's got the contributors, so there may be someone in there that I can sort of look at. So I did go and look at it, and I did find Department 22. It was department22.uk, and it shows all the big globalist companies they've worked with to try and get this circular economy through. That's what this is about. That's what they're for, is to convince that there should be no waste. And they also want to change people's food habits. So in other words, it's going to be a controlled economy. You won't be able to throw anything out. You'll be in trouble as they go through your garbage, because you won't be allowed to have garbage anymore, people. You'll have to reuse it somehow. And it's got, these are the companies they've worked with. Sainsbury's, which is the one I just said. IKEA, Panasonic, Nissan, the British Council, McDonald's, Coca-Cola. You name it. There's like a huge list of people on there that they've worked with. So they're just one little tiny company that's out there pushing this circular economy idea, and they push that idea through Sainsbury's and all those other companies I just mentioned. So you can see straight away that the globalists want these people on the block, because they want them to convince you that you have to get rid of your meat diet and eat the insects and the patented food that they create. That's where it's going. So the farmers from the past that actually made organic farm and made that food edible will now be driven off their land, and it will be taken over by globalists who will then use it for whatever purpose they want. But I know one thing. We're not going to get to go there ever again. That's what's going to happen. Anyway, people, I'll keep reporting on what's happening with food, because that's how I got into this in the first place. Way back, decades ago, when you had the True Food Report that was from Greenpeace, but I think it wasn't Greenpeace, it was just the Greens. I'm not actually sure where that originated from, but it was a report to let you know if companies were using GM or not. Had like the green thumb up and the red thumb down. And I remember that after years, it started to fall apart and the big companies started to influence it. So you'd have Coles getting the green thumbs and Woolies getting the red thumb. And it started to become obvious that it was already compromised. But that's what got me involved in the whole thing, was actually food in the beginning anyway. So full circle, people, but really food is what you've got to protect. If we don't start growing something for ourselves, it might be illegal to do that in the future. Okay, people, this is Conspiracy Oz podcast for Sunday, the 24th of March, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.